Radio Krishna presents Stories from the Vedic Scripture, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Originally written in Sanskrit several thousand years ago by Srila Dwaipayana Vyasadeva, it was translated into English by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder and spiritual guide of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Your narrator is Amala Bhaktadas. And now today's story, entitled The Reincarnation of King Bhadat. Bhadat was a wise and experienced sovereign who one might have thought would rule for hundreds of years. But while in the prime of life, he renounced everything, his queen, family, and vast empire, and went to the forest. In so doing, he was following the advice of the great sages of ancient India, who recommend that one devote the latter part of one's life to self-realization. King Bhadat knew that his position as a great monarch was not permanent. Therefore, he did not try to keep the royal throne until death. After all, even a king's body ultimately becomes dust, ashes, or food for worms and other animals. But within the body is the imperishable soul, the real self. Through the process of yoga, the self can be awakened to its true spiritual identity. Once this occurs, the soul need not spend another term of imprisonment within a material body. Understanding that the real purpose of life is to free oneself from the cycle of reincarnation, King Bhadat journeyed to a sacred place of pilgrimage called Pulaha Ashram in the foothills of the Himalayas. There, the former king lived alone in the forest along the bank of the Gandaki River. Instead of his royal dress, he now wore only deerskin garment. His hair and beard grew long and matted and always appeared wet because he bathed three times a day in the river. Each morning, Bhadat worshipped the Supreme Lord by chanting the hymns given in the Rig Veda, and as the sun rose, he recited the following mantra. The Supreme Lord is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe. By virtue of his different potencies, he maintains all living beings desiring material enjoyment, and he bestows all benediction upon his devotees. Later in the day, he collected various fruits and roots, and as recommended in the Vedic scriptures, he offered these simple edibles to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then took them for his food. Even though he had been a great king, surrounded by worldly opulence, now by the strength of his austerities, all his desires for material enjoyment vanished. Thus he became free of the root cause of bondage in the cycle of birth and death. By his constant meditation upon the personality of Godhead, Bhadat began to experience symptoms of spiritual ecstasy. His heart was like a lake filled with the water of ecstatic love, and when his mind bathed itself in that lake, tears of joy flowed from his eyes. One day, while Bhadat was meditating near the bank of the river, a deer came there to drink. While she drank, a lion in the forest nearby roared loudly. The doe was pregnant, and as she jumped in great fear and ran from the river, a baby deer fell from her womb into the swiftly flowing waters. The doe, shivering in fright and weak from the miscarriage, entered a cave where she soon died. As the sage observed the fawn floating down the river, he felt great compassion. Bharat lifted the animal from the water and, knowing it to be motherless, brought it to his ashram. He daily fed the deer with fresh green grass and tried to make it comfortable. Soon, however, he began to develop great attachment for the deer. He lay down with it, walked with it, bathed with it, and even ate with it. When he wanted to enter the forest to collect fruits, flowers, and roots, he would take the deer with him, fearing that if he left it behind, it would be killed by dogs, jackals, or tigers. Bharat took great pleasure seeing the deer leap and frolic in the forest like a child. Sometimes he would carry the fawn on his shoulders. His heart was so filled with love for the deer that he would keep it on his lap during the day. And when he slept, the deer would rest upon his chest. He was forever petting the deer and would sometimes even kiss it. Thus his heart became bound to the deer in affection. Being attached to raising the deer, Bharat gradually became neglectful of his meditation upon the Supreme Lord. He thus became distracted from the path of self-realization, which is the goal of human life. However, even though Bharat was aware of these considerations, he thought to himself, "Because this deer has taken shelter of me, how can I neglect it? Even though it is disturbing my spiritual life, I cannot ignore it. To neglect a helpless person who has taken shelter of me would be a great fault." One day as Bharat was meditating, he began as usual to think of the deer instead of the Lord. Breaking his concentration, he glanced around to see where the deer was. And when he could not discover it, his mind became agitated like that of a miser who has lost his money. He got up and searched the area around his ashram, but the deer was nowhere to be found. Bharat thought, "When will my deer return? Is it safe from tigers and other animals? When shall I again see it wandering in my garden, eating the soft green grasses?" As the day wore on and the deer still did not return, Bharat became overwhelmed with anxiety. "Has my deer been eaten by a wolf or a dog? Has it been attacked by a herd of wild boars or by a tiger who travels alone? The sun is now setting and the poor animal who has trusted me since its mother died has not yet returned." He remembered how the deer would play with him, touching him with the points of its soft, fuzzy horns. He remembered how he would sometimes push the deer away from him, pretending to be annoyed with it for disturbing his worship or meditation, and how it would then immediately become fearful and sit down motionless a short distance away. "My deer is exactly like a little prince. Oh, when will it again return? When will he again pacify my wounded heart?" Unable to restrain himself, Bharat set out after the deer, following its tiny hoof prints in the moonlight. In his madness, he began to talk to himself. "This creature was so dear to me that I feel as though I have lost my own son. Due to the burning fever of separation, I feel as if I was in the middle of a blazing fire. My heart is now blazing with distress." While frantically searching for the lost deer along the dangerous forest paths, Bharat suddenly fell and was fatally injured. Lying there at the point of death, he saw that his deer had suddenly appeared and was sitting at his side, watching over him just like a loving son. Thus, at the moment of his death, the king's mind was focused completely on the deer. In his next life, King Bharat entered the body of a deer. Most living entities are not able to remember their past lives. But because of the spiritual progress the king had made in his previous incarnation, he could, even though in the body of a deer, understand the cause of his taking birth in that body. He began to lament, "Oh, what a fool I was! I have fallen from the path of self-realization. I gave up my family and kingdom and went to a solitary holy place in the forest to meditate, where I always contemplated the Lord of the universe. But due to my foolishness, I let my mind become attached to, of all things, a deer. And now I have justly received such a body. No one is to blame but myself." But even as a deer, Bharat, having learned a valuable lesson, was able to continue his progress in self-realization. He became detached from all material desires. He no longer cared for the succulent green grasses, nor did he give a thought to how long his antlers would grow. Similarly, he gave up the company of all deer, male and female alike, leaving his mother in the Kalanjara Mountains, where he had been born. He returned to Pulaha Ashram, the very place where he had practiced meditation in his previous life. But this time he was careful never to forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead, staying near the hermitages of the great saints and sages, and avoiding all contact with materialists. He lived very simply, eating only hard, dry leaves. When the time of death came and Bharat was leaving the body of the deer, he loudly uttered the following prayer. "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the source of all knowledge, the controller of the entire creation, and the supersoul within the heart of every living being. He is beautiful and attractive. I am quitting this body, offering obeisances unto him, and hoping that I may perpetually engage in his transcendental loving service." In his next life, King Bharat took birth in the family of a pure saintly Brahmin priest and was known as Judd Bharat. By the Lord's mercy, he could again remember his past lives. As he grew up, Judd Bharat became very much afraid of his friends and relatives because they were very materialistic and not at all interested in making spiritual progress. The boy was in constant anxiety, for he feared that by their influence, he would again fall down into animal life. Therefore, although he was very intelligent, he behaved just like a madman. He pretended to be dull, blind, and deaf, so that the mundane people would not try to talk to him. But within himself, he was always thinking of the Lord and chanting his glories, knowing that alone could save him from repeated birth and death. Judd Bharat's father was filled with affection for his son, and in his heart he hoped that Judd Bharat would someday become a learned scholar. Therefore, he tried to teach him the intricacies of Vedic knowledge. But Judd Bodded purposely behaved like a fool so that his father would abandon his attempts to instruct him. If his father told him to do something, he would do exactly the opposite. Nevertheless, Judd Bodded's father, until the time of his death, always tried to instruct the boy. Judd Bodded's 9 stepbrothers considered him dull and brainless, and when their father died, they abandoned all attempts to educate him. They could not understand Judd Bodded's inner spiritual advancement, but Judd Bodded never protested their mistreatment, for he was completely liberated from the bodily concept of life. Whatever food came his way, he would accept it and eat, whether it was much or little, palatable or unpalatable. Since he was in full transcendental consciousness, he was not disturbed by material dualities like heat and cold. His body was as strong as a bull's, and his limbs were very muscular. He didn't care for winter's cold, summer's heat, wind, or rain. Because his body was perpetually dirty, his spiritual knowledge and effulgence were covered, just like a valuable gem covered by dirt and grime. Each day he was insulted and neglected by ordinary people, who considered him to be nothing more than a useless fool. Judd Bodded's only wages were the small portions of unpalatable foodstuffs provided by his brothers, who made him work like a slave in the fields. But he was unable to perform even simple tasks satisfactorily, because he did not know where to spread dirt or where to make the ground level. For food, his brothers gave him broken rice, rice chaff, oil cakes, worm-eaten grains, and burned grains that had stuck to the bottom of the cooking pots. But Judd Bodded gladly accepted all this as if it were nectar. And he never held any grudges. He thus displayed the symptoms of a perfectly self-realized soul. Once a leader of a band of thieves and murderers went to a temple of the goddess Kali to offer in sacrifice a dull, unintelligent human being resembling an animal. Such sacrifices are nowhere mentioned in the Vedas and were concocted by the robbers for the purpose of gaining material wealth. Their plan was foiled, however, when the man who was to have been sacrificed escaped, so the chief robber sent his henchmen out to find him. Searching through the fields and forests in the darkness of night, the robbers came to a rice field and saw Judd Bodded, who was sitting on high ground guarding the field against the attacks of wild boars. The robbers thought Judd Bodded would be a perfect sacrifice. Their faces shining with happiness, the robbers bound him with strong ropes and brought him to the temple of the goddess Kali. Judd Bodded, because of his complete faith in the protection of the Supreme Lord, did not protest. The robbers bathed Judd Bodded, dressed him in new silk garments, and decorated him with ornaments and garlands. They fed him a sumptuous last meal and brought him before the goddess, whom they worshipped with songs and prayers. Judd Bodded was forced to sit before the deity. Then one of the thieves, acting as the chief priest, raised a razor-sharp sword to slit Judd Bodded's throat so they could offer Kali his warm blood as liquor. But the goddess could not bear this. She understood that the sinful thieves were about to kill a great devotee of the Lord. Suddenly, the form of the deity burst open and the goddess herself appeared, her body burning with an intense, intolerable effulgence. The infuriated goddess flashed her blazing eyes and displayed her fierce, curved teeth. Her eyes, crimson orbs, glowered, and she appeared as if she were prepared to destroy the entire cosmos. Leaping violently from the altar, she quickly decapitated all the rogues and thieves with the very sword with which they had intended to kill the saint, Judd Bodick. After his escape from the Kali Temple, Judd Bodick continued his wanderings, remaining aloof from ordinary materialistic men. One day, as King Rahugan of Sauvira was being carried through the district on a palanquin, resting on the shoulders of several servants, the men, who were fatigued, began to falter. Realizing they would need another carrier to help them cross the Ikshwamati River, the king's servants began searching for someone. Soon they saw Judd Bodick, who appeared to be a good choice because he was very young and strong as an ox. But because he saw all living beings as his brothers, Judd Bodick could not perform this task very well. As he walked, out of compassion, he kept stopping to be sure he wasn't stepping on any ants. Unaware of what was causing the delay, King Rahugan shouted, "What's going on? Can't you carry this thing properly? Why is my palanquin shaking like this?" Hearing the threatening voice of the king, the frightened servants replied that the disturbance was being caused by Judd Bodick. The king angrily chastised him, sarcastically accusing Judd Bodick of carrying the palanquin like a weak, skinny, tired old man. But Judd Bodick, who understood his true spiritual identity, knew that he was not his body. Therefore, Judd Bodick remained unaffected by the king's angry criticism. Even if the king were to order him killed, he would not have cared, because he knew that the soul is eternal and can never be killed. Judd Bodick remained silent and kept carrying the palanquin as before. But the king, unable to control his temper, shouted, "You rascal, what are you doing? Don't you know that I am your master? For your disobedience, I shall now punish you." "My dear king," Judd Bodick said, "whatever you have said about me is true. You seem to think that I have not labored hard enough to carry your palanquin. That is true, because actually, I am not carrying your palanquin at all. My body is carrying it, but I am not my body. You accuse me of not being very stout and strong, but this merely shows your ignorance of the spirit soul. The body may be fat or thin or weak or strong, but no learned man would say such things about the real self within. As far as my soul is concerned, it is neither fat nor skinny. Therefore, you are correct when you say that I am not very strong." Judd Bodick began to instruct the king, saying, "You think you are lord and master, and you are therefore trying to command me. But this is also incorrect, because these positions are temporary. Today, you are a king, and I am your servant. But in our next lives, our positions may be reversed. You may be my servant, and I your master." Just as the waves of the ocean bring pieces of straw together and then break them apart, the force of eternal time brings living entities together in temporary relationships, such as master and servant, and then breaks them apart and rearranges them. "In any case," Judd Bodick continued, "who is master and who is servant? Everyone is forced to act by the laws of material nature. Therefore, no one is master and no one is servant." After explaining all this to King Rahugan, Judd Bodick said, "If you still think that you are the master and that I am the servant, I shall accept this. Please order me. What can I do for you? King Rohugan, who had been trained in spiritual science, was astonished to hear the teachings of Judd Bodit. Recognizing him as a saintly person, the king quickly descended from his palanquin. His material conception of himself as a great monarch had been obliterated, and he fell humbly to the ground, his body outstretched, offering obeisances, his head at the feet of the holy man. O saintly person, why are you moving through the world unknown to others? Who are you? Where do you live? Why have you come to this place? O spiritual master, I am blind to spiritual knowledge. Please tell me how I may advance in spiritual life. Judd Bodit replied, because his mind is full of material desire, the soul transmigrates to different bodies in this material world to enjoy and suffer the pleasures and pains brought about by material activity. When one awakens to his original spiritual consciousness, he sees that he has nothing to do with these things. One accomplishes this by concentrating one's mind in meditation upon the Supreme Lord. If one fails to constantly fix one's mind on the Supreme Lord and render service to Him, he must undergo the cycle of birth and death. The condition of the mind causes births in different types of bodies. These bodies may be those of many different species, for when one uses the mind to understand spiritual knowledge, he gets a higher body, and when one uses it only for obtaining material pleasure, he receives a lower body. My dear King Rohugan, as long as the conditioned soul accepts the material body and is not freed from the contamination of material enjoyment, and as long as he does not conquer his senses and his mind and come to the platform of self-realization by awakening his spiritual knowledge, he is forced to wander in different places and in different forms in this material world. For example, in a previous birth, I was known as King Bodit. I attained perfection by becoming completely detached from material activities. I was fully engaged in the service of the Lord, but I relaxed my control over my mind and became so affectionate to a small deer that I neglected my spiritual duties. At the time of death, I could think of nothing but this deer, so in my next life, I had to accept the body of a deer. Judd Bodit concluded his teachings by informing the king that those who desire freedom from the cycle of reincarnation must always associate with self-realized devotees of the Lord. Only by doing so can one attain the perfection of knowledge and cut to pieces the illusory associations of this material world. Unless one has the opportunity to get the association of the devotees of the Lord, he can never understand the first thing about spiritual life. The absolute truth is revealed only to one who has attained the mercy of a great devotee. This is the simple secret by which one can revive his dormant spiritual consciousness, end forever the vicious cycle of reincarnation, and return to a life of eternal pleasure in the spiritual world. After receiving lessons from the great devotee Judd Bodit, King Rohugan became fully aware of his constitutional position, namely that he was not a king of subjects, but a spirit soul who was a servant of the Supreme Lord. He was free of the bodily concept of life, which changed the soul to the endless cycle of birth and death in the material world.
Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare
Today's story was entitled The Reincarnation of King Bharat and was produced by Radio Krishna at the KHQN studios in Los Angeles, California. It was derived from the Vedic scripture, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and was translated from the Sanskrit by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder and spiritual guide of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The adaptation for radio appeared in the book Coming Back, published by the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust in Los Angeles. Your narrator was Amala Bhaktidas, and the engineering and musical selections were under the direction of Vaibhavi Devidasi.